So Jesus says, but lay up treasures for yourself in heaven, where neither moth nor rust destroys, and where thieves do not break in and steal. And then he says this, for where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. If you lay up earthly treasures, material possessions, and if you worship those above God, above God's work in your life, your heart then flows into those things, and then that becomes what really matters to you, and that becomes what you worship. But if you invest in the things of God, if you use your money and your resources, your time and your finances to lay up treasure in heaven, your heart then follows your money, and your treasure, your heart is where your treasure lies. He then goes on to speak about the eye. The eye is the lamp of the body, so if your eye is healthy, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eye is bad, your whole body will be full of darkness. If then the light in you is darkness, how great is the darkness? And then verse 24, no one can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money, or as the footnote says, mammon. Which is what Andrew has been talking about and what we've been addressing over the last few weeks. When you did some war painting, I don't know if you were here for that 4 weeks ago, when we had some fun. I wasn't here. I say we, but I'm a part of you. So I was here, not here. When we had some fun and we made an analogy of going to war against mammon. Jesus mentions money or mammon as a god, as something that we can fall into worshiping. And so we realized and we said that Jesus spoke more about money than some of us actually realize. He spoke more about money than he did about heaven and hell put together. The Bible has more direct verses about money than it does about faith and prayer combined. And so we realize that actually for Jesus and for the scriptures, this topic of finances is a significant thing. And I think it becomes clear when we realize why it's so significant, because money represents what you invest your money in, represents what is of value to you. You see, you can tell me what's important to you, but if I were to look at your bank statements and look at your diary, your time and your money, then despite what you tell me with your voice, your bank statements, what you spend your money on and what you invest your time in truly reveals what is of importance to you. And so one of the reasons I think the Bible speaks so much about money and why Jesus spoke so much about money is because what we invest our money and our time into reveals what we really prioritize. And what I said to our evening congregation last week is I said, if anyone is visiting us here tonight and you say, oh, we're visiting a church and they're talking about money, what you need to know about us when you're visiting us and when you're kind of engaging with us is we're a Jesus people. We've met this man who has radically changed our lives. He died for our sins and then he rose again. He's given us new life. And he really has changed everything about us. I use the phrase game changer. I'm not sure if any of you are familiar with a game-changing moment in your life. Something happened and there was a game-changing moment. Maybe you met someone. It was a game changer. For those of you who love sports, you know that someone can come onto the field and they can change that entire direction of that game. In cricket, you give the ball to Shane Warne back in the day, and he would change the game. Not in our benefit. But you see, for us who practice these disciplines of giving our money away and bringing our tithes and offerings to the church, it's overflowing from meeting Jesus, who's changed our lives. He's changed the way we see everything. He's changed the way we see our sexuality. He's changed the way that we see our work and our relationships. And he's changed the way we see our money. We see this in the story of Zacchaeus, who comes into contact with Jesus, who was a fraudulent embezzler, robbing and stealing. And he meets Jesus. And in an encounter with Jesus, his whole attitude towards money is changed and transformed. And so this topic of money is flowing out of a revelation of coming into contact with a man who has radically changed us. And what we do with our money has been impacted because of how he has loved us and changed us and opened his heart and shared with us. And so we are a Jesus people. And everything we do flows from our relationship with Jesus. And so this topic of finances overflows from that. And so we wanted to give ourselves 7 weeks to look at it. And we're now at the stage last week and this week at looking at the Christian's responsibility to support the local church, to support those who work in the local church, and to support the forward momentum of the local church. And there's a number of ways that we can support the local church. We support the local church with our prayers. We support the local church with our commitment in terms of helping lead and kind of add a forward momentum to being involved in the local church. And of course, we support the local church with our finances. And so that's what last week and this week has been about. Next week, we will talk about how we support those who are in need, the call to help those who are struggling financially, those who are poor among us and our society. And in the final week, we look at the need to take the gospel further out to the outer parts of the world to expand the gospel. And then in the final week, we have one more session based on financial management for yourself, personal financial management. So these 2 weeks that we've had, last week and this week, we've been looking at the topic of our responsibility as Christians to support the local church, to bring dignity to the church, to place value in the church. When you read the scriptures, you see how central the church is to God's purpose and plan. You see how much Jesus loves his church. In the book of Revelation, he writes letters to his churches. And I believe that when we bring our tithes and our offerings to the local church, that we are showing an equal love for the church, that we are valuing the church, that we are displaying how important the church is to the forward momentum of the gospel, and that it really is the primary means. And that's why we start with the tithes and the offering. Tithes and the offerings to support the local church as the primary means through which the kingdom of God will advance and through which lives will be changed and transformed. If we have thriving, spirit-filled, vibrant local churches that are able to change and transform our communities, we will see our neighborhoods changed. But to do that, we need to buy into a vision of the church. And that's the rubber hits the road financially when we talk about what is our motivation or what is our commitment towards financially supporting our local church and God's plan and purpose through the local church. And so we're talking about this topic last week, tithes and offerings. And Murray spoke last week about the topic of tithes. And if you were here last week, he spoke about the Old Testament practice of bringing your tithe to the temple and the various different tithes and the first tithe that came to the Levites and the second and the third tithe. And he spoke about Abraham and Jacob who tithed before Moses' law. And how for Jacob and Abraham, their tithing was a kind of decision to make Yahweh, this God that we read of in the Bible, as their God. That many ancient people were tithing to other gods in an understanding where there were many gods, multiple gods. And Jacob and Abraham, in this moment of faith, have this revelation that Yahweh is the true God and bring this tithe. And Jacob's language could suggest that he commits to continually bring a tithe. They bring their tithe as a kind of a commitment to say, Yahweh, you are our God. And as Murray taught, the tithe, the tenth, is a representation of the whole. It's a symbolic representation that, Lord, all of this is yours, and you've blessed me with all of this. And as a symbolic representation, I bring a tenth to you as an offering. And we saw that the Old Testament, Murray taught us, the Old Testament doesn't only end with tithes, that the Old Testament itself speaks about voluntary offerings. And so we, too, here at Church of Maine, talk about tithes and offerings. When Andrew mentioned it this morning, he said the tithes and the offerings. And so we see that the tithe is, our understanding, the tithe is the initial start, and the offerings is what goes over and above that. And so what Greg and I are going to do, that was what Murray did last week. What Greg and I are going to do this week is just address some common questions around this a topic of bringing your tithes and your offerings to the local church. So just to clarify once again, before we get into the questions, our understanding here at Church of Maine has been that it is a good principle to follow, that each one of us would take a tithe of the money that God blesses us with and bring it to the church to enable those who work in the church to earn a living. And then over above that, that we would bring an offering to enable the church to run, to pay the rent or to pay for the electricity. And so as a general rule of thumb, we've encouraged Church of Maine for the last almost 20 years. We turned 20 in February. And so you're sitting on chairs that were supported for, not by, by Church Armenas, who've helped this local church go forward for the last 20 years. We've encouraged Church Armenas to apply the principle of bringing a tithe of their income and an offering over and above that. And so it's not been a legalistic thing. It's not been something that we've kind of enforced, that we check up on you, that we ask you to submit your bank statements, that we check in our bank statements. No one has to put their name on any gift that comes through or donation that comes through, but we've taught it as a principle, and we've called Church Armenas to believe in this principle and to do it out of a conviction of faith. And so it's a principle that we see in the Old Testament, and that a principle we see that predated the law, and a principle that we see was applied in the law, and a principle that we think can continue to work in the new covenant. And certainly from 1 Corinthians chapter 9, Paul himself appeals to the understanding that the Old Testament Levites were supported by the tithe and the offering system. And so for us, it's a principle that we feel is a valuable principle for supporting the local church in the new covenant. And so that's been our understanding and our teaching. And so what we go into now is just some common questions around this practice of tithes and offerings. And it might get quite technical, and that's okay. You're right with that. It's okay to get technical, because if these things are important, then it's good that we actually talk about it, that we deal with it. So this might not be the most riveting sermon this morning. Me and Greg might get into some technicalities. But remember, we're a Jesus people. Everything we do flows out of a revelation of who Jesus is. And when we get actually into Christian living, sometimes the technicalities are important. And so we talk about and address those. And so I'm going to address some questions first, and then I'm going to hand over to Greg, and he's going to address some questions after that. And so our general principle has been that those who work for the ministry should earn their living from that ministry. Galatians chapter 6, verse 6 says, you should share all good things with those who teach. 1 Timothy chapter 5, verse 18 talks about those who preach and teach are worthy of double honor in comparison maybe to the widows. And then 1 Corinthians chapter 9 talks about those who sow spiritually should reap materially. And in the same way, those who preach the gospel should earn their living from the gospel. And so the principle for us has been there, and we've always understood that the principle of the Old Testament is implemented and into the New Testament. So some of these questions we as elders might vary just slightly in the way we would answer them. We're all convinced as elders here at Church on Main that the principle is a worthwhile principle that we would encourage all of you to apply. But we would encourage you to apply it out of a conviction, out of your own faith, not as something you have to do, not as something legalistic, but out of a personal conviction, as something that you perceive to be God's wisdom for you to support your local church and to bring an offering to God as a sign that what He has blessed you with is from Him. And so we all are convinced around the principle, but you know, if you ask us some of these technical questions, they get quite technical. And at the end of the day, what you need to do is you need to decide in your heart what the Scriptures teach on this issue, what God is calling you to do, and then you need to apply that in faith. All right, so some of the questions we often get. Here we go. Are you with me after all that preferencing? I'm going to drink this water, Greg. I don't know what you're going to drink. You got that, okay. So first of all, one of the questions is, should we tithe and bring our tithes and our offerings on our gross income or our net income? Now, for those of you who are working and you would talk about gross and net, you would get a payslip and you'd get a salary at the end of the month. And that payslip of yours would show your kind of your gross income, and then there would be some deductions, usually tax or your unemployment insurance fund, your UIF, maybe some medical aid that the company maybe pays for you, and then you'd get a net. And so the question is, do I calculate my 10% on the gross or on the net? I think for me, it's always been a straightforward exercise that God has blessed me with the gross. If I've decided to have a medical aid through the company that I'm working for, then that's a personal decision. That's a lifestyle decision. I don't deduct tithes after my grocery bill. Why would I deduct tithes? Why would I calculate tithes after my medical aid bill? And then in terms of my tax, I mean, that's a service that I receive benefit from. I receive roads to drive on. I receive streetlights. And regardless of whether your conviction is that the government in which you currently live in is using your tax as well, I think that you give to Caesar what is Caesar's and to God what is God's. And that if the government is calculating what they're taxing you on the gross, then it just doesn't seem right to then calculate, for me personally, to then calculate what you want to bring as your tithe and your offering on the net. You got me. And so when it comes to someone earning income, for me, it's just been a straightforward thing. God has increased me by the gross, and that's, for me, what I've been increased by. Greg will deal with retirement savings. So some of you who have retirement savings, and that sometimes does come off the payslip as well. Greg will deal with that a little bit later. It is maybe a little bit more tricky for those of us who run businesses and who earn our money from running our business, and we have a gross and a net. We sell products or we sell services, we sell time, and there's various costs involved in bringing about those profits. And I think for us here at Church of Man, the principle has always been, we want to recognize what God has blessed us with. What has God blessed me with? What is the increase? What is the increase in my wealth? What is the increase in my living standard as a result of this practice that I've been doing, this job or this gift that I've earned or whatever it might be? And so if you're running a business and you have various costs involved to get to a certain level of profit, it could well make sense that you would tithe on a net, some form of net that you would work off, either your gross profit or your operating profit. If you run a business, you're familiar with those phrases. If you're not an accountant and you don't run a business, there'll hopefully be a question that is relevant to you. But it would make sense in some ways, I guess, to calculate your tithe on your net. But there are different views on this topic. Some Christians take the view that you should just tithe on your revenue. Their understanding, their backing for that is in the Old Covenant. Those who brought a tithe would just bring a tithe from the entire crop and they wouldn't work out any deductions. God blessed them with an entire crop. They'd bring their first fruits, their tenth, into the storehouse. And so their conviction is they bring a tenth of their total sales, their total revenue. And I think maybe if you are in this situation and you're trying to work out what should be done, there's no danger in asking for some wisdom, for asking someone that you look up to and maybe another Christian leader who has run their finances in a way that is kingdom orientated and generous. Or maybe you want to ask your home group leader or maybe one of the elders just to give you some input or some thoughts, maybe just to help you kind of work out if you are acknowledging the profits that you should be acknowledging in terms of calculating your tithe. I think that you just want to make sure that you're not storing away huge amounts of money in your practice, maybe earning money from one business, but then having another business on the side that's just operating more profits and larger profits, and your idea is one day to give that away as an inheritance to your children. But just to be aware of, as a business person, someone in business, what are you being increased by? And some guidelines is usually, what are you being taxed on? It's not always perfect, but it's a good guideline because the tax man knows when you make a profit. And so he's able to deduct when you've made a profit and take his share. And so I think as a business person, I think the principle is you want to ask yourself, Lord, you're blessing me as a businessman, you're a businessman or a businesswoman. You've given me an increase, and I want to, with faith and with a good conscience, know what you've increased me by and work out what my tithe would be on that. So does that make sense? Is that helpful for some of you? The second question sometimes we get is, what about our investment income? So I have, some of you will have money that you've invested in, maybe for future savings, long-term savings for children's education. What about gifts? If someone gives me a gift, what about an inheritance? What about a capital amount? If I sell a car or a bicycle, I make a profit on that. Or if I sell a house, more likely a house than a car. If you made a profit on a car, you did really well. Well, what about those capital amounts? This is, I guess, that question of all those abnormal amounts, you know? I tithe on my monthly income, my earnings. What about those abnormal amounts? I think the same principles would apply. I think a loan, obviously, is not an increase. You would be paying that loan back. But various other abnormal increases that you might get in inheritance, gifts, investment income. Some people have significant investment income. They have access to some form of trust or some form of family savings that allows them to send their children to certain schools or to pay for certain holidays. And I think if I were in that position, I would just want to know before God, what is God increasing me and my household by? How are we being blessed by God in terms of what we're receiving? And what would be a right amount for me to calculate an appropriate tithe and offering to bring to God? I told you it's going to get technical. The reason I love tithing is because it forces you to count your blessings. You can't just go, oh, I'm blessed, I'll give a vague amount. It's like, oh, hang on, wow, I've actually been blessed, and look at how much it is. Because if the tithe is big, then you know what that's telling you? The other 100% or 90% is also big. And it forces you to say, wow, I've really been blessed. And to count and to realize, say, if I hadn't had to calculate this tithe, I might not have gone and counted how much God has blessed me. And so it's a wonderful way of actually just counting your blessings and just coming into a place where, thank you, Lord, for bringing your blessing into my life. And so I think the same principle would apply for investment, income, for gifts, for inheritances. What do you feel God has blessed you by? And if you have significant investment income, you'll know that once a year, once again, you have to file your tax return. You get your statements from Alan Gray or from wherever they are, and they show you what your increase has been. And sure, if you want to calculate the real growth, take off inflation, by all means. You see, it's very technical because there's real growth and there's inflation. And what is real growth? Before God, work out what you've been increased by, and then calculate an appropriate tithe. That would be our counsel. This is not legalistic, guys. As we said, this is us trying to be practical, trying to be real, trying to really get to the nitty-gritty. And once again, our understanding of tithing is a principle in God, a principle that God has blessed us and that we would acknowledge that blessing. So one of the next questions we sometimes get is, I'm in debt. Should I first clear my debt and then begin the practice of tithes and offerings? My recommendation if you are in debt is to try and manage your debt from this day forward, to try and group it all together and to try and get yourself into a place where you can slowly but surely pay it all off. But I don't think that our lack of financial discipline in the past should put us in a situation where we now potentially rob God, to use Malachi's language, in the present. Randy Alcorn, when he answers this question, says, should you rob God in order to pay man? If you've been foolish to find yourself in a situation where you can't afford your debt and where your lifestyle isn't able to, where you're not able to continue your lifestyle because of the debt you've gone into, does that mean that you should now put yourself in a place where you are no longer bringing an offering and a tithe and offering to God? And so I think the right thing to do would be to find yourself in a situation where you can manage your debt, but still bring your tithes and your offerings as a recognition that God is continually blessing you in order to get you out of that debt. So I think that's a good understanding of, you know what, we may have made some decisions in the past that were foolish, but we can now apply the principle of God blessing us and the principle of our tithes being our first fruits, not after we've paid off our debt or after we've kind of paid off our school fees or paid our rent, but our first fruits as an act of worship to say, Lord, you've blessed us with this income. We know we need way more, but as an act of worship and thanks, we bring you this tithe and this offering to worship you, to thank you, and to trust you for more. To trust you for more. And so Andrew's been recommending this book, and Greg and I are going to be referencing it, and I really would recommend you get it. You can get it electronic version, Randy Alcorn, Money, Possessions, and Eternity. And it really would be a fantastic read to get into some more of these technical things. So I've got three more questions. So the next question is, I can't afford to tithe. Should I not just start doing it slowly? And once again, Randy Alcorn is quite humorous the way he answers this question. He says, if you were robbing 10 grocery stores, And so you decided today to only rob 5 grocery stores. He says, I guess that would be an improvement, but it really isn't. You're really not getting the point, are you? So for Randy Alcorn, using the language of Malachi chapter 3, to not bring the tithe and the offering is to rob God, is to fall short of his standard. And that's another reason I love the principle of tithing is, hey, it's uncomfortable, but it creates a standard of generosity for us. And in the Old Testament, it was a standard that Malachi used to accuse the people of robbing God. And so there was this standard that was there. And if you're able to see a principle in God and want to live in the principle of God, I think for us in the New Covenant, it can be a good principle, a good guiding line for where our generosity should start. And so I think that once again, coming back to the idea of our first fruits, I think that we should get ourselves into a place where our tithes and our offerings are the first item in our budget. They're the first thing we do because it's our recognition that God has blessed us, that God has provided for us. And so everything else should be budgeted after that. And so maybe your lifestyle needs to change in order for you to bring an offering, a tithe and offering to worship God, to give gratitude to God for. And maybe you need to just be a little bit more honest and realize that you're choosing your lifestyle prior to deciding to bring a tithe and offering. And actually, your tithe and your offering is somewhere down here on a level of importance where it actually should be your first kind of recognition, your first moment to worship God. So that's the question of I can't afford to tithe. I think everybody who's increased has an opportunity to tithe. And you might need a whole lot more money, but I think if you've received a blessing, you've received an opportunity to give. And so I think it's more blessed to give than to receive. And I think when we start apologizing for people and saying, you're in a situation where you might not need to give a tenth or give an offering, I think we're actually robbing from people the joy of giving. We're robbing from people the privilege of living by faith, of acknowledging that God has blessed them and that they need to trust God for more. We're robbing people of that opportunity. When Jesus saw the widow give her 2 coins into the offering box, he didn't say, stop her, she really needs that. There was a sense in which she was living in faith, and that Jesus affirmed that. And so I can't afford to tithe, I start slowly. I think that if you're willing to maybe be a little bit honest and think to yourselves, well, maybe I can afford to tithe. Okay, my second last question. Should I back tithe? Okay, so I'm 40 years old, I just got saved. Should I tithe for my last 40 years? Or I'm 40 years old and I've only just realized that this is an area of grace that I haven't been living in. What should I do now? Leviticus 27 speaks about redeeming the tithe, and there was this option where if you wanted to buy back a sheep, you would redeem it by adding on a fifth, an extra 5%. Some people say that if you redeem a tithe, that there's a principle there. There's Zacchaeus, who defrauded people. So he didn't defraud God, but he defrauded people. And when he encountered Jesus, he pays them back, he double or more than what he defrauded them from. So there's a sense in which I've been doing something outside of God's will. I think that to live in freedom, to live in grace, as with all of these things, but then to be open and honest and say, is there some way, God, that I have, in my negligence, overlooked this ability, this grace of giving? And maybe now I'm still in the place where I can put that right. I think that there's principles in God's scriptures for us to think through those things. So I don't know if that's a satisfactory answer, but I think that what's important, as with all of these things, what's important is our heart and our sense of God, you've blessed me. And I think by all means, if this is something new to you as a Christian, you're becoming convinced and you love the local church and you want to support the local church with your tithes and your offerings, and you're able to start doing that today, and you're not really able to deal with much of the past, and you've got faith to start living from today, live in grace, live in faith. But if you're in a place where you feel, hey, you know what, actually there were some things that I overlooked in the past, that I deliberately didn't want to acknowledge I was blessed with, and kind of closed my eyes to some significant blessings that God brought into my life, and I'm feeling now maybe that there's an opportunity to outwork them. I don't want to be the pastor that stops you from experiencing that grace in your life of giving. So search God, search your heart, and find the grace with which to deal with that situation. Finally, my question before I hand over to you, Greg. Thomas might want to stand up and add to any of these answers afterwards. Like I said, us as elders might phrase some of these things slightly differently. Can I tithe annually? Can I tithe annually? Well, I think the best principle to calculate your tithes and your offerings and any form of giving, your helping of the poor, your helping of advancing the gospel, just your heart of generosity, I think any form of giving should be consistent with your income. It just makes more sense. So when you're blessed, when you receive income, you would then calculate something and a portion to give, a tithe and offering, something to help the poor with, something to help various other forms of causes that you feel are good and important to support. And so I think if you earn your income annually, I don't know if there is anyone here who earns their income annually. Maybe you're a student and you receive an annual kind of lump sum for your bursary. There have been students in the life of the church who felt stirred by God that bursary was a blessing, that they wanted to tithe on that blessing. And so maybe you receive a lump sum and that's your moment of income. Or maybe you're doing some kind of medicine and you get some kind of lump sum for your PhD kind of thing and you get that lump sum. So I think tithing annually, maybe a form of a business owner, you get your annual, you work out what your business makes annually. But I think the best principle to apply there is to bring your tithe and your offering when you receive your blessing. And so to set it aside immediately as soon as you get it and then to bring it into the storehouse. So Greg, I'm going to hand over to you and let you handle the rest of the questions from here. Thanks so much.
We're an Acts church. We share all that we've got. It'll be Mark's water. Thanks, Mark. Do you guys need a break? Marcus, do you have that picture? Just give you a little breather, a break. We're dealing with quite a few issues. Just to remind us what we're on about, the series. All right. My next question that we're going to address is, what is the storehouse? What is the storehouse? When we talk about the storehouse in Malachi that's being robbed, when we talk about bringing to the temple in the New Testament in this era, well, how do we define the storehouse practically? Where does our sacrificial giving go to? So if you can bear with me, I'm going to zoom out a bit because I think this is an important question to answer. Remember that the primary beneficiary of our giving is ourselves. We're dealing with a heart issue. We're saying, okay, Lord, you know, He knows where your heart is, there your treasure will be also. Sorry, where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. It works the other way around, I think. So when we are giving, we know our heart is going to that place. We've been asked to work out our salvation with fear and trembling. So we're coming before God and we're saying, Lord, how best can we work this out? Well, what is the storehouse? What is the temple in the New Testament, under the New Covenant? Well, the perfect high priest in Hebrews 5, verse 6. So also Christ did not take upon himself the glory of becoming a high priest, but he was called by the one who said to him, you are my son, today I become your father. And in another passage, God says, you are a priest forever in the order of Melchizedek. And I think, I just need a bit of water. I think Murray's very clearly told us that this is now the third stage. We had the order of the priest Melchizedek that Abraham gave his sacrificial giving to, his acknowledgement that all things came from God. We had the Levitical priests under the law. And now we have Jesus, whoever rules and reigns in the order of Melchizedek. And we are now in this place, what is the temple for us? How do we acknowledge that God is the giver of all things to us? In Ephesians 3, verse 7 to 13, Paul says, of this gospel I was made a minister according to the gift of God's grace, which was given me by the working of his power. To me, though I am the very least of all saints, this grace was given to preach to the Gentiles the unsearchable riches of Christ, and to bring to light for everyone what is the plan of the mystery hidden for ages in God, who created all things, so that through the church the manifold wisdom of God might now be made known to the rulers and authorities in the heavenly places. God is working through the church. Jesus is the high priest of the church. So how does the fact that God is working through the church and is this he's given the power by his given by his power the ministry of the gospel, how does that implicate me? Well, what is my relationship then to the church? Ephesians 2 verse 11 to 22 says, therefore remember that at one time you Gentiles in the flesh, called the uncircumcision by what is called the circumcision, which is made in the flesh by hands, remember that you were at that time separated from Christ, alienated from the commonwealth of Israel and strangers to the covenant of promise, having no hope with and without God in the world. But now in Christ Jesus, you who once were far off have been brought near by the blood of Christ. For he himself is our peace. You have made us both one and broken down in his flesh the dividing wall of hostility by abolishing the law of commandments expressed in ordinances. I feel like I'm booming a little bit. That he might create in himself one new man in place of the two, so making peace, and might reconcile us both to God in one body through the cross, thereby killing the hostility. And he came and preached peace to you who were far off, us, the Gentiles, and peace to those who are near. For through him we both have access in one spirit to the Father, so that you are no longer strangers and aliens, but you are fellow citizens with the saints and members of the household of God. Built on the foundation of the apostles and prophets, Christ Jesus himself being the cornerstone, in whom the whole structure being joined together grows into a holy temple in the Lord. In him you also are being built together into a dwelling place for God by the Spirit. So you see the pattern here. The new temple is the church. It's the body of believers. It's the way God is reaching this world. It's the way God is shepherding his people. It's the way he's ministering to us. He sent his Spirit among us to sew us together as the body. So if we've been brought near to God by the blood of Christ, we are now members of the household of God. The church of believers is his holy temple, the place where God dwells by his Spirit, and he's revealing the mysteries to us to guide us in this new era that he's working. This is the temple that our sacrificial giving should be going to. I think Paul reaffirms this when in 1 Corinthians 9, 3 and 14 that Mark referred to earlier, when he said, well, I'll just read the whole piece from verse 3. He says, this is my defense to those who examine me. Do we not have the right to eat or drink? Do we not have the right to take along a believing wife as do the other apostles and the brothers and the Lord and Cephas? Or is it only Barnabas and I have no right to refrain from working for a living? So he's quite angry. We serve as a soldier at his, who serves as a soldier at his own expense? Who plants a vineyard without eating any of its fruit? Or who tends a flock without getting some of the milk? Do I say these things on human authority? Does not the law say the same? For it is written in the law of Moses, he's quite happy referring to the law of Moses, you shall not muzzle an ox when it treads out the grain, for it is an oxen that God is it for the oxen that God is concerned? Does he not certainly speak for our sake? It was written for our sake, because the ploughman should plough in hope, and the thresher thresh in hope of sharing in the crop. If we have sown spiritual things amongst you, is it too much that we reap material things from you? If others share this rightful claim on you, do we not even more? Nevertheless, we have not made use of this right, but we endure anything rather than putting an obstacle in the way of the gospel of Christ. Do you not know that those who are employed in the temple service get their food from the temple, and those who serve at the altar shall share in the sacrificial offerings? In the same way, the Lord commanded that those who proclaim the gospel should get their living by the gospel. The focus is on us, our hearts, our sacrificial giving, going to the people who share the gospel with us, who shepherd us, who minister over us, who are the part of this temple into which we are knitted in. And the best expression, the best understanding we have for that is to give to our local church. It's the place where we are knitted in and the place we are ministered to. So it answers another question: can I tithe to an NGO, or can I give this type of giving to an NGO that acknowledges all things are from God, that He's drawing us to give to this pattern? My answer is that's not this type of giving. It's probably a good idea to give to an NGO. There's probably some really good work that they're doing, but that's another form of giving. I don't think that's what we're seeing in Scripture. I don't think that's what we're seeing the pattern set up. I don't see how we can equate the work of the NGO to the work of the gospel and the shepherding that we experience and see in Ephesians 3, how God is making His manifold wisdom known to this earth through. So I hope that helps answer that question. If you still have questions, Tomo's here. But we also said we want to set up the info@churchonmain.org address if you still have questions after this, so you can send them into this, and Mark and I will endeavor to try and answer. If it's tricky, we'll ask Tomo to help us and hopefully give you a meaningful response. One of the other questions that I had that Mark referred to was, what about things like our pension fund contributions, contribution to retirement annuity? Well, it's clear that we need to be working out our increase. I think it's just a question of when, and that we all need to work out with God with a clear conscience. You know, the same issue of annual giving. I just want to be really practical and say one example here. And it can be different for you how you work this out, so bear that in mind. But the way I've worked out for my retirement giving is when my retirement deductions, the way I've worked that out is it's going to be hard for me to work out what is the initial contribution into that retirement today and what is the increase on that retirement through the investment process, the interest, dividends, the growth on the assets. So I think it's simpler, especially if I'm not around one day and that retirement annuity is being paid out to my spouse. How, you know, I don't know that she's going to be able to work out what was the portion when I put the original capital in that I then showed that all came from God, and what was the portion that I now need to do that on as I get paid out from the retirement. I think it's easier to work out that portion when that retirement annuity pays out, that pension pays out. So different people do it differently. We've just worked out that the way we're going to do it is we're going to tithe on that amount when we receive it, when we harvest it from that field, so to speak. When we bring that in, we get that payout from that pension fund. So that's a super practical one. One or two other common objections, and then we're done. Isn't it legalism to tithe? Well, the truth is it's actually not exempt from degenerating into legalism. The same way any other good habit is. Attending church, reading your Bible, prayer. They can all degenerate into legalism. And we've got to guard our hearts. We've got to guard our faith. We've got to do it from a place of, from the right place. But the question that might, our giving might degenerate into legalism is the wrong angle to approach it. You know, it's the wrong angle then to say if all these other things could degenerate into legalism, then we've got to throw those out too. It's just the wrong angle. Tithing belongs under the law. Well, Randy Alcorn's comments on that, if your argument is that tithing is something under the law, just his comments are that with Jesus' emphasis on sacrificial giving, never once suggested that the floor set by the tithe is now invalid, but simply that the ceiling of Christian giving is far above it. When Jesus told the disciples to go the second mile, He was assuming that they'd already gone the first. We have explored how the concept of tithing is a step of faith and acknowledgement that all things come from God and something that predated the law. If you say it's not for me, under the new covenant of grace, I will choose to give as I feel led. Well, everywhere Jesus speaks to the law, he raises the bar. There's an argument there that why wouldn't it be raised in the area of financial giving? It would be inconsistent with the pattern that he's given in every other area that was in the law. So if you choose to give more than your than a 10%, as Mark mentioned, it's we rather viewing it as a training wheel, as a starting point to start understanding that all things come from God and what it does for our heart. It frees us from mammon, because once you're giving, you're breaking that bondage, materialism, and so as a training wheel, it's a really good starting point. So that's the last question we had prepared to answer. If there are still more, info@churchonmain. Hopefully this is just a series that brings some reform where there's areas that we need to reform in our lives. That I know for one person that he was in our home group a few years ago, hearing a series on finance was the thing he needed. When we dissected this area, it brought that realization that this area maybe wasn't under God and wasn't something that Jesus, that the kingdom had come, the rule and reign of God had come into his life in this area, and that was the thing that triggered him actually deciding he needed to turn to God. He wasn't, until then he hadn't actually given his life to God, but this was the thing where he realized there's something else that's got a great power in one's life, and he needed to actually make that clear decision. And hopefully this is the kind of series that can create that kind of incision. It can bring us to a point where we can see, you know, what we need to do to live with our heart fully for God.